The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. Internationalism. The Communist Manifesto ends with the resounding phrase, "Workers of the world unite." This was not simply a moral appeal. Capitalism has created a working class in the hundreds of millions upon whose labor the profits of the world's multinationals derive. Workers face the same essential conditions the world over. Whether their pay is high or low, all workers are exploited. They therefore have a common interest that spans national borders, in spite of their national differences. Some argue that the plunder of one nation by another precludes working class solidarity, because the workers in the plundering nation benefit from the plunder. The steady decline of living standards for American workers, the growing gap between rich and poor, and the diversion of social spending towards military spending and corporate welfare makes this argument today seem out of touch with reality. Workers in Europe and the United States, so the argument goes, are better paid because they are somehow benefiting from the comparatively lower pay of workers in Mexico. It is true that an auto worker in the United States and an auto worker in Mexico, working at the same level of productivity, receive different wages. But they are both exploited, and by the same masters. Indeed, in many cases, well-paid workers are as exploited, in terms of how much surplus work they perform for the bosses, as low-paid workers, if not more. The lowest pay is usually associated with industries that are the most labor-intensive. That is, where the rate of exploitation is lowest because labor-saving machinery is employed. The inequality of wages worldwide acts to the detriment of the world working class because it permits capitalists to pit lower-paid workers against better-paid. A rise in the standard of living for any section of the working class, on the other hand, cannot but benefit all. Capitalism's economic crises are also increasingly global in scope. That means that struggle also takes on an increasingly international character. In the mid-1840s, when industrial capitalism was limited to Britain and parts of mainland Europe, a series of revolutions spread across Europe. They were bourgeois revolutions, and they ended in defeat. But in each country, the working class emerged for the first time as a social force to be reckoned with. Again, in 1917, the Russian Revolution sparked international revolution. Coming on the heels of world war and economic hardship, it set off a world conflagration. German workers rose up and overthrew the Kaiser, setting up workers' councils similar to the Russian Soviets. There were Soviets in Hungary and Finland before the revolution was crushed. Workers in Italy formed factory councils, and in 1920 came to the brink of revolution before they were undercut by moderate socialists. The whole of Europe, fretted British Prime Minister Lloyd George, is filled with the spirit of revolution. The war and the Russian Revolution also set off anti-colonial revolts in Italy, Ireland, and elsewhere. Victor Serge described the atmosphere of both bourgeois panic and revolutionary hope in 1918. Quote, "The newspapers of the period are astonishing. Each day, in large type with headlines across the page, they carry last-minute dispatches. Big rumors picked up in Stockholm by anxious ears. Riots in Paris, riots in Lyon, revolution in Belgium, revolution in Constantinople, victory of the Soviets in Bulgaria, rioting in Copenhagen. In fact, the whole of Europe is in movement. Clandestine or open Soviets are appearing everywhere, even in the Allied armies. Everything is possible, everything. On 15th of October, Vorovsky telegraphs Zinoviev from Stockholm. Revolution builds up in France. So runs the headline of his dispatch in the newspapers. A workers' popular movement began 2 days ago and is spreading energetically in Paris. The workers are demanding the immediate release of all political prisoners. A Soviet of Allied soldiers has made contact at the front with a Soviet of German soldiers. End quote. The division of the world into national states means that struggles in each country have a certain tempo and dynamic that is not identical in timing or character. Revolution starts in one or a few states and then spreads. But as the experience of the Russian Revolution shows, any revolution that remains in isolation cannot survive. Engels understood this as early as 1847. In a question and answer piece he wrote that was scrapped for the Communist Manifesto. Quote, "Will it be possible for this revolution to take place in one country alone? No. By creating the world market, big industry has already brought all the peoples of the earth into such close relation with one another that none is independent of what happens to the others." End quote. The call for workers to unite across national boundaries, then, is not merely a moral appeal. The material condition for socialism, abundance, exists on a world scale, but not within the confines of national borders. This is true because economic development is extremely uneven, with enormous wealth and productive power concentrated in some regions far more than others. Any country that attempts to fall back on its own resources quickly finds that its production system is too lopsided and incomplete to pull itself up by its own bootstraps. Having been shaped in connection with the world economy, one country finds it doesn't produce enough agricultural products and must import them. Another, not enough machinery and spare parts. The problem, moreover, is most acute for countries that were dependent colonies in the past, because their economies were distorted by the needs of the country that exploited them, which usually meant turning them into sources of cheap labor and raw materials, and retarding industrial development. Cuba, for example, remained dependent on sugar exports for 80% of its capital needs for decades. First dependent on the United States, it later depended on Russia for substantial support. But even then, it has never been able to create a fully diversified industrialized economy. This is the reason why the Marxist movement always argued, until Stalinism distorted and inverted the message, that there cannot be isolated pockets of socialist development. End of section.